We all love puppies, but whoever said raising one was going to be this hard? Join us over the next 8 episodes as we follow Scratch co-founder Mike as he learns how to best raise his new puppy Mellow with tips and tricks from So Help Me Dog Trainer Sophie along the way. This is The Mellow Files.
Hello, welcome back to The Mellow Files. I am Mike. I'm here with Sophie, and today we have a very special guest, Dr. Jared. How are you doing?
Hi guys, thanks for having me. I'm good.
Our pleasure. This is a little bit sad for us. I think it is our final episode until we get Sophie to Melbourne for an in-person visit to my puppy Mellow, who is the muse of this podcast and is currently like licking a licky mat furiously in his crate down the other end of the apartment. So inevitably he'll like start, if you hear like all these footsteps, it sounds like a stampede. That'll be Mellow finishing his licking mat and coming down the hallway to join the podcast. Enough about me and Mellow's distraction techniques. Tell us about yourself, Dr. Jared. You're at Johnston Street Vet in Victoria?
Yeah, I am. So I've been a vet at Johnston Street Vet Clinic in Fitzroy for about 3.5 years now. I graduated from vet school in 2014 and spent the first 4 years over in London doing a whole heap of work, doing some horses, doing some emergency work. But now I mainly do see dogs and cats, which has been great. It's been a great job. And I've been back in Melbourne for probably going on 4 years now.
Nice. You guys are like you're like inner North royalty. I swear every dog and cat. I'm sure there's some that are scared of the vet, but every dog and dog owner I know absolutely loves you guys. And like we have so many customers who go to Johnston Street Vet, so it's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks. We have a good following. So yeah, that's great to hear. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know how a vet becomes like embedded in culture, but somehow you guys have done it.
So that's good.
Awesome. I guess, like, what's it like being a vet and seeing so many puppies and, you know, older dogs and having to make all these really tricky decisions and being able to provide so much relief to both animals and the humans that look after them, but it must be a taxing job, surely.
Yeah, it's full on. It's not an easy job, but it's so rewarding. We see from one consult to the next a young puppy. We've just been adopted, going through all the early things we need to look out for, and then the next consult might be a really elderly dog that might be going through a terminal disease, and it's confronting. And we see lots of animals in very different, I guess, situations, but it's rewarding. So it's good for the soul.
So how do you find it, kind of, because it's at the moment like COVID, everyone kind of bought puppies and everyone bought different kind of animals. How are you finding it working kind of that vet industry at the moment, because it's kind of that vets are all booked out everywhere. It's really hard to get an appointment same day. Like, how are you finding that mentally, dealing with that as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy time. I think COVID really opened people's eyes up to, you know, having companionship with animals, being at home. And I think I feel like most people through COVID ended up getting a puppy, good and bad. Mostly good, I think. All those dogs are, you know, doing well, but there's obviously some where people kind of underestimated maybe the breed that they got or the amount of work involved. That's been challenging. I think as a profession itself, I think as any profession, I think a lot of people have gone through COVID and looked at what is important for them and you know, is a really stressful job, what they want. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, have left the industry, not just during COVID, but over the last few years. There's a huge shortage of vets worldwide at the moment, not just in Victoria, all over the world. I've got friends in America and the UK, and it's the same situation over there. The demand for seeing a vet is huge. Everyone's got a new dog, so it's unbelievable. We're trying to see as many as we can, but we're fully booked every single consult, and we have been for the last couple of years, which is almost unheard of. So as a vet, I mean, it's good for job security, but for dog owners, it's pretty stressful at the moment.
Oh, wow. Well, if anyone's like been umming and ahhing about whether you become a vet, there's lots of animals that need you right now. So
absolutely. Today's now's the time.
Wow. So I suppose that kind of leads into my next question is, how can dog owners or puppy owners help you guys when we come to the vet? So like, what can we do to kind of get more comfortable? What makes it easier for you guys when they come in?
Yeah. Look, I think the invention of Dr. Google has been great, but at the same time has been challenging. I mean, I always encourage people to do their own research. But a lot of people do come in, you know, having read a lot online, whether it's just Google searches or Facebook forums, and they've kind of made up their own decision on what's going on. And without sort of assessing the whole animal in one picture, things are often overlooked, and it's hard to then, you know, try to convince someone that what they're thinking is not, you know, what is actually going on. So, yeah, that's been really challenging.
Even for you as the professional who's done many years of study.
Absolutely. Yeah, someone reads a Facebook article and they know more than what we do. So, look, most people are great, but that's very challenging. So I think coming to the vets, just have a really open mind. We're all there just to you know, try to get the best outcome for your pet. If we can have like an open sort of discussion and dialogue, that's super helpful.
Yeah, right. I guess like day one, like. So I would imagine Johnson Street Vet isn't seeing too many breeders, you know, come in with like literally a few day old or a few week old puppies, being that you're so in the city. And most dogs are sort of bred out in the country. But I guess, like, take us through the first 6 months of sort of or year of what it might look like for the average person who's just bought a puppy and like building a relationship with a vet. Are you like the best friend that their puppy sees, you know, five times in the first year? Or is that only in a bad case where there's a few health issues?
Yeah, no, look, so most puppies that will come to us will have had a single vaccination with the breeder, generally probably about 8 weeks of age. So the next time they'll need to come to the vets will be about 10 to 12 weeks for their second vaccine, followed up by a vaccine 4 weeks later. So two vaccines to start with, and we vaccinate against the core viruses that, you know, we've been able to really suppress in community over the decades of vaccination. So we'd vaccinate against distemper, canine hepatitis, parvovirus, and two components of kennel cough. And these vaccines have meant that the incidence of these diseases is almost not seen anymore, with the exception of kennel cough. There's also other vaccines that we can vaccinate for. Leptospirosis is one. Interestingly, it's coming down to Victoria more so than we once saw. With, you know, warming climates and wetter environments, it allows more transmission of this bacteria to come down. So once a really rare disease, we're seeing it more and more. So we're sort of adapting as the climate changes and as things evolve and you know, keeping up to date with what's out there.
Right. So so the course of, like, I guess the standard vaccinations they might get would be different for someone in Queensland as opposed to, say, Tasmania or Victoria?
It can be. Most of the time, across the board, will keep up to date with most vaccines across Australia. Some will elect to vaccinate in higher risk situations, but I think majority of vaccines that they're given to puppies will be pretty universal, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, lepto's really bad in Sydney. A lot of dogs have passed away from it.
Yeah, wow.
I think they said because they were drilling for the light rail.
Okay.
And then all kind of the rats were coming up.
Yeah, and right. Yeah, it's going to be challenging. I think as the as it evolves, it's going to be a different story in a few years' time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, great! Good, just another fun thing in life to look out for these days.
Okay. Yeah. And with vaccines, I mean, we vaccinate every year. So as an adult, they'll have an annual health checkup and a vaccination. There's some individuals that aren't suitable for vaccines. That's pretty rare. Some dogs really occasionally might have a mild vaccine reaction, or maybe a dog is immunocompromised. So instead of vaccinating, we can do titer testing. So we actually test the antibody levels in the dog's blood sample, and if they're high enough, then we don't need to vaccinate that year, and we can keep testing until those antibodies wane. So I guess similar to what we do in people as well. But yeah, most people will come in for those core puppy vaccines and then a yearly vaccine after that as well.
Yeah, right. And are you always also the first port of call to introduce flea tick worming, whichever, you know, I guess that course to dog owners as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think most breeders are pretty good, and they'll give some worming and flea treatment prior to adoption. And then most clients will come in with questions about, you know, what to do from now. So we prevent a few different things. So ectoparasites, anything that lives on the skin of the animal, so fleas, ticks, and mites. Endoparasites, so anything within the intestinal tract, so most intestinal worms, and also heartworm. Heartworm is interesting. It's actually transmitted by mosquitoes, and is a worm not in the gut but in the blood vessels. So pretty gross, but yeah, we prevent with either a yearly heartworm injection or monthly oral medication as well. So I guess heartworm is pretty. The incidence of heartworm in Victoria is pretty low. Again, more up in Queensland, where it's a lot warmer, where mosquitoes are, we see much higher incidence up there. But, you know, having said that, I saw one case a few months ago in Victoria, which is almost unheard of. But that dog had travelled around a bit. But, yeah, we're seeing it more and more. So, yeah.
And with heartworm, so what are the chances of survival? Are they quite low, like if you're not protected against it?
Yeah, so heartworm's interesting because it takes a long time. It takes months, sometimes up to a year or two, to actually catch up, I guess, with the animal.
Oh, really?
If we pick it up early, we can start treatment before the little tiny organism has then developed into a full adult worm. Once it gets to a full size and they live in the blood vessels, they get into the heart and can cause cardiac failure. So you'll see some pretty significant signs before that happens, but heartworm testing is always recommended prior to giving any prevention, just in that case. Yeah.
What signs would you see that people can kind of look out for?
Yeah, I mean, early on, for the first maybe 6 months, you might not see anything at all. The signs for an adult infection might be similar to heart disease, I guess, those sort of signs. So a dog that might be quite lethargic, their blood pressure's not great, they've got a big cough. Lots of kind of respiratory symptoms, I guess, and a dog that's just probably not gaining weight and appearing unwell. So it's tricky because it's not something that's always on your radar, but when you do see it, you can't miss it.
Right. So yeah. I guess that first 6 months really about sort of prevention, setting their health up well, and hopefully with some good food like scratch, simple plug. they you know, got a strong gut, strong immune system that's performing well, and they're in a good place going forward. I guess what are some of the most common kind of like health issues that might present, you know, for puppies coming to the clinic?
Yeah. It's quite dependent on breed. So if we say I see a golden retriever puppy, so a large breed dog, every consult while it's developing, I'll check their hips. So hip dysplasia is quite prominent in some breeds. So I just do basic hip extension in puppies. So I should be able to pull the hips back comfortably all the way till about 180 degrees. If I can't get that range of motion or there's any obvious pain, that could be an indicator of poor hip conformation at birth. And it's something that's really important to pick up prior to the dog developing into an adult. So if we detect any pain or concerns, we can do hip x-rays. And if there's really poor conformation or we're concerned, there's a few different things we can do before development finishes. There's some surgical interventions if it's really bad. And there's quite a fine window where we can do that type of surgery. If we miss that window, then we have to manage hip dysplasia either through sort of conservative management or at a later date, if it gets really bad, a total hip replacement, which is pretty rare. But though that's one thing, I guess, that we can really easy pick up when a dog's developing. Some dogs have really narrow, what we call base canines. So narrow base canine, sorry. So their deciduous teeth on the bottom jaw might sit a little inward compared to the top jaw. So when they're biting down, their teeth on the bottom jaw are actually digging into the gum on the upper jaw. If we pick that up, we can either start ball therapy. So maybe we get a dog to chew on a ball over time, and that can widen that those canines from developing. Or we can take out those baby teeth and prevent that trauma from happening. So you can see that pretty easily in a consult. Owners might see a dog that's eating quite slowly, or it seems quite painful, not eating as fast as what you normally would expect a ravenous puppy to eat. So that's something we pick up pretty early on.
Are most puppies generally scared of the vet the first time they're coming in this new environment?
I mean, there's a lot of new smells. There's lots of other, I guess, patients in the waiting room as well. But no, they're pretty relaxed most of the time. I think it's when they sort of realize that, hey, maybe the vet's is not what I thought it was. That's kind of when they they put on the brakes at the door sometimes. So if dogs are really anxious about coming in, we'll try to give them a really good experience to start with. So every time I vaccinate a dog, I'll give them a spoonful of peanut butter, just so it's a good experience. We've got treats all at reception, and some dogs that are quite timid or a bit wary of the vet, so I just encourage them to come in. If they're walking past, come in for a treat. Just make it a good experience. It doesn't have to always be a health check or a vaccination, I guess.
Yeah, right. Mallow's gone the complete other way. He's like, the vet is his favorite place in the world. They've given him they gave him so many treats. There's other dogs in there to play with. Like, his arousal levels go like through the roof when he goes in the vet, more than anywhere else.
Some love it. It's great. And we've the puppy school that we do at our clinic is amazing. It bonds the animals so well to the clinic that every time they come in, they're just so excited because they think it's puppy school and they're ready to go.
Yeah, I love that. And I suggest that to my clients all the time, because when they're young, and if you're a first time pet parent as well, you freak out a lot. So your dog eats something, you take them to the vet, and you're always taking to the vet when they're not feeling well or it's like a bad experience. So then they start to be like, oh, I'm scared. So I say the same thing. I say, if you're walking past, just go in and just be like, hello, everyone, make it a good experience, and then leave, and then just keep doing that. So yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, I love that.
Awesome. Any other health issues people should look out for, and just, you know, things you wish that, I guess, were a bit more mainstream, like habit?
Yeah. I think a big thing, if people are going to get pet insurance, for instance, get it before you come in, for the first time, because if we sort of pick up anything that's abnormal, so even if a dog comes in with itchy skin, and you know that's written in the clinical notes, any sort of insurer in the future might exclude skin conditions. So it's really important to get it. If you're going to get it, just get it before you come in for the first time. I think as well, we see a lot of dogs that might get a bit of too much attention. I guess overbathing is a big one. So dogs that can come in that they've been bathed every a few times a week with shampoos, come in with really dry skin, and it's really important just to do it maybe once a month and use a really gentle dog shampoo. Dogs have a pretty different pH to humans, so if we strip all those good oils from the skin, they get really itchy skin. It can lead to certain allergies in future, maybe getting worse as well.
I guess as dogs grow up, do you sort of see many gut health issues and those kind of things, like itchy skin and just itchy skin and like intolerance to lots of different things?
Yeah, I mean, skin allergies, it's pretty breed specific, but we do see a lot of skin allergies, mostly seasonal allergies. So this time of year, being in spring at the moment, we have huge flare-ups of allergies. So if it's an environmental allergy, there's lots of different things we can do. If it's a food allergy, then we can start doing diet trials and trying to eliminate maybe which protein source that they're allergic to. It's a pretty common sort of aspect of developing, and we see allergies maybe develop 1 to 2 years of age, so it's pretty rare for a dog to come to us as a puppy with actually full-blown allergies. It takes at least a year for that to develop as well.
Yeah, right. We sort of said that, I guess there's so many foods that are pretty low in fiber that the gut essentially just like churns through and churns through and processes so quickly. And the gut bacteria, I mean, like most people, like a good 70% of people are probably feeding kibble, you know, majority of their dog's diet. And if that food isn't well balanced, if it's essentially just like overloading or underloading the different bacteria levels every single meal for like repetition, you know, over the course of a year or two, like it's no wonder. It's like our own diets. We eat too much of something, our body starts rejecting it, it starts like expressing itself in different kind of ways. And I guess like kibble and, well, kibble, any dog food, if something is the majority of a dog's diet, you just really need it to be balanced. Otherwise that stuff like adds up. It's interesting that year one, year two is when you start to see it.
I guess with diets, it's obviously really important to have good fiber. There's some foods out there that will be, they seem good. They're very, very protein heavy, to the point where it's almost just meat by itself. And we have a lot of dogs that come in on those particular diets, pretty constipated and, you know, not doing as well as they could be. So something that's really balanced with really good fiber sources, makes a huge difference. And I think if there's any sort of change in diet as well, it's really important to gradually mix it. So if we change from one diet to the other, as you said, if a dog's been on a diet for a long time and we change all of a sudden, all that bacteria in the gut just have a really hard time adapting. So we always recommend to, you know, gradually mix it over. So maybe 20% of the new food each day, and then we're then on to feeding the new diet, and that helps helps a lot.
Interesting. Where do you kind of sit on, I guess, exposing dog to variety in terms of like proteins and ingredients kind of early days versus say, have one food and then like one thing at a time?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely encourage it. I really encourage people to, not just to use one particular food. I mean, I always encourage people to supplement, you know, a commercial food maybe with something that's cooked at home, so it's all balanced. There's some great. I mean, I know Scratch is a newish kind of dog pet brand, and it's great. I think this approach is definitely the future for feeding, and I always recommend these types of diets to clients who are coming in, and maybe the days of relying on a bag of dry food that's been on the shelf for a couple of years might be a thing of the past soon. Yeah,
hopefully. I mean, there's so many brands, like not just us but other brands, who are young and doing interesting things, not just in how they're getting food to people, but how they're cutting down the time from making it, whether it's more whole ingredients instead of less broken down processed stuff, which just like can create a havoc with like inflammation, or even supplemental types of feeding that at the moment is super expensive, but you know, it's not, you know, we make dry food at Scratch, but our perspective is like whatever it is to make the dog as healthy as possible. And that for most of us, you know, if you've got ultimate means, that's probably a variety of different things in our book. Like even for the average person who isn't, you know, out there buying two or three different food products, like if you look in the fridge, there's probably, odds are that all of us have some really healthy things in our fridge that just either as treats, like the odd blueberry. I know they're super expensive right now, but blueberries and various different things can just provide so much variety or pleasure and nutritional benefit. And that's just looking in the fridge and the pantry itself, let alone kind of like going out and actually kind of going shopping for a very varied diet for them.
I think that probably comes down to, you know, back in the day, it's probably more convenient as well, just to have a bag of food sitting on the shelf that you can just open up when it's mealtime. But I think with the new addition of a newer way of feeding, you guys are making it a lot easier for owners to feed, you know, the best types of foods that we can offer them. So it's just definitely a step in the right direction.
For sure. Even we actually, so our three recipes, two of them have like a similar sort of profile, like they're both grain free, probably share about 70% of the same ingredients. And then they mainly differ, I guess, in oil quantities and the protein source for really sensitive dogs. But we've got another recipe which we think is really important. That's a recipe, that's our lamb with ancient grains one, and it's a very different profile. And we sort of ended up encouraging most people to basically mix between the two recipes, because they're essentially same brand, very, very different recipe. And they went absolutely nuts as soon as we kind of like made that aware that people can mix feed, because I think everyone is so afraid of the dog having the runs all over the carpet or anything like that, because when it goes bad, it goes really bad. But if you build it, listen to your vet and slowly, I guess, try some variety and build their guts kind of like reaction, ability to tolerate different things and enjoy different things up, it can be a really strong thing. I mean, Mallow, he moves between all of the scratch recipes, and I can just, flip out one for one meal and wouldn't know a thing. Maybe one recipe he proves a little bit more than the other one, and that's about the only difference there is between him eating three very different things as a 7-month-old. So I'm a huge believer in exposing to variety early, and not just as a health thing, but Sophie and I always talk about getting feedback off your dog of like what their likes and dislikes are and how they react to something and everything. Like even a simple thing like feeding is like a communication kind of thing for your dog and a way of seeing what they enjoy and get benefit out of in life.
Yeah, definitely. I've had clients sort of have come to me and the food that they've been feeding forever is just hasn't been great, and maybe have not recognized that, and we've switched them over to something else and they're like, oh wow, he's so much happier and he's got so much energy, and like it's a simple thing, but it makes a huge difference.
So Mallow's 7 months old now, and he's starting to count down, well, he definitely won't be counting down the days until the snip. It feels like common wisdom about when that should happen has changed in recent years. Kind of what are you recommending to puppy owners now?
Yeah, it's definitely changed in the last few years or maybe 5 years for sure. I think historically, de-sexing was routinely done around 6 months of age. But I mean, there's a lot of new studies evidence of diseases developing that might be related to maybe de-sexing too early. So we always recommend, depending on breeds, I guess. So a large breed dog, if it was a male, we would definitely recommend de-sexing between 12 and 18 months. If it's a really large dog, that could be up to 24 months. And that just gives the growth plates time to fully close, so the skeleton is mature before we start taking away some of those really important hormones that are really important for their development. And then maybe if we see a small breed male dog, then maybe around 12 months is preferable. Really depends on the breed. So we generally have a bit of a discussion based on the dog in front of us about what would be the best age. With females, I always like to de-sex a female dog when their growth plates are closed, so generally around 12 months of age. Most female dogs will have a season anywhere from sort of 6 to 9 months of age, depending on breed. Smaller dogs will have a season prior to that. So if we allow that time for the growth plates to close, they generally have one season, and then we de-sex them after that. If we de-sex female dogs too soon, then we can develop a bit of urinary incontinence later in life. So that's one thing that we've started to see a lot over the last few years for sure. So yeah, it makes a big difference. And with dental health, I always really encourage people to brush their dog's teeth, ideally daily. If it's not daily, a few times a week is going to be better than nothing. And really get them used to that early on. So even though the puppy teeth are going to fall out, around 4 or 5 months of age, getting them used to that sensation of something getting, a finger putting in there against their gum or in their mouth is a pretty sort of daunting thing for an adult to go through. So if we start maybe with some peanut butter on your finger and just smear it around the gums, and then we might build up to a toothbrush, maybe with some peanut butter on it, and then in a few weeks' time we're fully brushing the teeth with some proper dog toothpaste. Even though those puppy teeth will fall out, just get some really used to it. And so if we do that every day for the rest of the dog's life, that dog was probably going to have great teeth for its whole life, and we can prevent a lot of suffering in the future. There's other things out there like dental chews that we recommend. There's definitely better chews out there if people can't brush their dog's teeth, but everything helps.
Nice. I need to follow that advice because Mallow has not had his teeth brushed yet, unfortunately. Although we have practiced a lot of sort of touching his face, yeah. and then our fingers over his gums and things like that. So he's kind of like comfortable with that. But toothbrush, toothpaste, it being a pleasurable thing and something he like either looks forward to or accepts. Like there's always a bit of resistance right now, and he's 7 months old. So I've got some catching up to do on that front.
You got some time. That's all right. But just go slow. It'll make a huge difference for you.
What's the number one thing that you wish every puppy owner realized?
Good question. Breed research, I reckon. It's so common to see dogs in the wrong environment than what they would benefit from. I mean, we have a lot of working dogs, Kelpies, in apartments in the city. And if an owner's not aware of how to manage a working dog like that, or putting in the time for training and socializing, it creates a whole heap of problems behaviorally in the future. So yeah, if you just do your research and pick a dog that's right for your lifestyle and right for your environment.
Yeah, sure. Not just appearance.
Exactly. There's certain breeds as well that are just known to have lots of issues. I keep picking on French bulldogs all the time, but they always have the worst skin allergies that we see. Lots of respiratory issues. Mm.
Our scratch brand was basically like founded on on Frenchies, who were really, really, really struggling, and we just like got big because it kind of went through these Facebook groups where people were just like, oh my god, scratch works so much better for my Frenchie than everything else. Yeah. And then that was like our first 500 customers right there. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're so prone. So I think if owners are aware that, you might face those issues, then that's great. But, some people come to us with these issues developing and, it's a shock for them. So
yeah, I second that. Do your research, please. Don't pick them on looks because, there's so much more to them, 100%, definitely. Yeah,
for sure. Even like Mallow is not a breed that should really be in an apartment, particularly not by himself. So while we are in an apartment right now, because early episodes I explained why I'm living in an apartment with a Nova Scotian Duckling Retriever puppy, but like the amount of changes I've had to do to my life to make it work for him while I'm in this situation, like if I just carried on with my life, like he would be a very unhappy dog, a pretty badly socialized dog. He would, like, the apartment would have been destroyed multiple times over. No one would be doing well out of this situation. So I've really had to bend and learn to bend my life, and as we kind of got him so much faster than what we thought we would. But wouldn't change it for the world, but it's hard.
And that's why we're doing this podcast.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, yeah, exactly. That's why we've got this podcast. As Mallow brings in the licky mat, which he is absolutely destroyed in the time we've been doing this podcast, I'm going to get back to puppy training. Dr. Jared, thanks so much for joining us. I guess where can people find Johnson Street Vets? You said Fitzroy in Melbourne. Any Instagram website stuff you want to point people towards?
Yeah, we've got a great Instagram. Our Instagram has got heaps of nice photos of the team recently. Lots of behind the scenes and dogs that we have in all the time. So yeah, that's a great little resource we can have a look at. It's a great clinic. It's definitely unique.
All right, thanks so much. Thanks so much for joining us on the Mallow Files, and have a great day.
Bye.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jared. Awesome. That was a great chat with Dr. Jared there. I think, well, what do I think? I think I'm getting sad. It's our final episode. Like this is.
Do we just keep going? It? Maybe like.
Yeah. Tell us, people. Email podcast@scratchpetfood.com.au if you want us to keep talking puppies.
Yeah, I don't like this part of the podcast, but we do have something quite exciting. Are we going to say what we're going to do?
Yeah, you're going to come down to Melbourne where your family is based, and I think it's more to meet Mallow than see your family over Christmas, but we're going to record a going to record a When Sophie Met Mallow episode and keep me accountable to all the things that I said Mallow was good at and all the behavioural advice you sent me.
I'm going to be like, right, no, I'm joking. I can't wait to meet Mallow. And you in person as well. We've never actually met in person.
I know, we've never actually met in person. So many like Zoom recordings by now.
Isn't it funny? Like, there's so many people I even speak to on Instagram that, or like, you know, speak face to face. On FaceTime or on Zoom, and I'm like, we haven't met yet. And I think we forget about that whole 2 year kind of COVID period.
So we're gonna record a podcast of that, and maybe even a little bit of video too, so we can all see how that's going and share some video tips. I guess that is a lot easier to get across.
Yeah.
On video, but I guess for now let's wrap up. When we do meet him, I'm going to get you to score him on all of, the episode one. We gave him a score out of 10 for all these different things. I'm going to try to get an impartial score to keep me and Mello honest.
Okay.
And blame it all when I get a bad score. Blame it all on the teenage years.
Yeah. Perfect. No, I'm sure I'll give him 10s across the board.
quite doubtful right now, as he's like ripping into a book.
Oh,
in the background,
he's just reading.
Yeah, he's kind of got one book that he got away with, and then we kind of like it happened often enough. Yeah. Like it was the book near the kitchen, and we're like always busy cooking, and like as long as you're not trying to like eat food, you're fine. Instead. But now we regret it. Where can people find you?
All right. Well, you can find me on Instagram, where I live most of my days. at So Help Me Dog. I do a lot of stories and I really talk about kind of my day to day and what's happening and also random stuff as well. Or you can find me www.sohelpmedog.net. And what about you?
Awesome. Well, you can find me at scratchpetfood.com.au. Either I'll probably speak to half of you who are Scratch customers. If you ever reach out with any questions about fixing up a recipe or a bit of feedback on our products, I'm always around, or at World of Scratch on Instagram as well, or in the dog park if you're around in the city of Melbourne, even Collingwood where our office is, or somewhere near Botanic Gardens where Mello calls home. Right now he is destroying that book, so I better say sayonara and see you in Melbourne in a couple of weeks to meet him in person.
Awesome, can't wait.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Soph, for joining me. You've shared so much great advice. And for everyone listening who got through our first few weeks of me having crappy audio and all the various things we've learned along the journey, thanks so much for being part of the Mallow Files. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you in a few weeks for a special episode.
Awesome.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.
That was the Mallow Files. You can find out more about Scratch, Australia's best dog food delivery, right to your door, their products, and their online training guides at scratchpetfood.com.au and over on Instagram at World of Scratch. If you'd like to learn more from Sophie and even make an appointment with her and your dog, you can find her at sohelpmedog.net and at sohelpmedog on Instagram.